Welcome to the show. This is the Calling It Podcast, powered by CLNS Media. I am Alex Barth. I am joined by Alex Lebowitz, and for the first time in months, Lebowitz, we get to talk some X's and O's. Football training camp is underway. The Patriots officially take the field tomorrow, Thursday. We're recording this Wednesday at around 6 o'clock in the evening, bypassing dinner so we can get our football talk to you good people out there, our tens of fans. How's it going, Lebowitz?
It's going great. You know, the summer is going by very quickly. Next week, we're going to be in August, which is kind of crazy to think. But the one consolation to the summer winding down as football season is upon us. Another Patriots season that we're all optimistic for. And I'm pumped. And a Red Sox team that also stinks and they're not fun to watch. So bring on the football.
They're making it real easy to transition. And real quick, before we get into that, quick shout out to the graphic design team at CLNS Media.
Oh, yes.
We have a new logo. You can check that out on Twitter at Calling It Podcast or on their website. All right, let's get into the football. Let's get into training camp. I love this time of year. I know there's no real games, and when we get to preseason games, people crap all over them, and maybe rightfully so, but everything's a possibility at this time of the year, right? No draft picks or busts. There's no debilitating injuries yet. There's no, you know, basement teams. Like, I don't even have to worry about fantasy football really yet because I hate dealing with fantasy football. It's all ahead of it. Like, college and pro. We are actually, as of the time we're recording this, we are almost to the minute, a month and an hour out from the first college football game. Everything is ahead of us right now, which is great. And specifically pertaining to the NFL, yes, we're very confident about the Patriots this year. I'm very confident about the Patriots this year. But, you know, kind of like we talked about with the NBA a few weeks ago, although in the NFL it's a little more often, things are pretty wide open this year. I think the Patriots are the best team. I think they have the best roster. Not trying to be biased. That's what I believe. Their roster right now is 60, 65 players deep in NFL talent. But after them, I mean, even the best teams have question marks. The Chiefs certainly have their question marks, I think, you know, in Tyreek Hill and his status and where his head's at, and they lost some pieces on defense. I think that the Rams, that's a young team. How do they handle the Super Bowl hangover? We've seen a lot of teams in their position kind of take a step back or two. And then after those three teams, the Patriots, the Chiefs, and the Rams, I mean, you have the Saints too, I guess, and the Saints are the Saints. If their defense comes along, they'll be an elite team, but Drew Brees only won one Super Bowl in how many tries? This thing's really wide open going in, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you have a lot of turnover in general. Obviously, the Browns have been kind of the team a lot of people have been talking about. It's going to be fun to watch. An Oakland Raiders team that's going to be on Hard Knocks, which I'm pumped about. I don't know if you're so good. It's going to be, I mean, John Gruden is made for that show. I mean, that's number one.
And he never got to do it in Tampa. This is his debut on Hard Knocks.
Definitely. Because he was in Tampa a while ago.
Right. Him and Antonio Brown, too. I think he's a great Hard Knocks character.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be the number one guy to watch for sure if you're talking about just ultimate personalities.
So, wait, quick tangent because you mentioned Hard Knocks. Uh-huh. Do you watch the show Last Chance U?
I do not, and I know I would like it a lot. I just need to sit down and do it.
I recommend it. So I think Hard Knocks is great. The peak football reality viewing for me is Last Chance U. Season 4 was excellent. I'll tell you this, Lebowitz, and then we can get back to the NFL stuff. But here's my plug for you to watch it as soon as you can. Mm-hmm. The head coach of the team, Jason Brown, who's since been fired, it's not a spoiler at this point because it was on like CNN and stuff. Imagine if you let Michael Scott coach a JUCO football team and then gave him a PCP addiction. That Jason Brown's addicted to PCP or does PCP.
But he acts like it.
Right.
Is it like Prison Mike?
Yeah, actually. In a lot of ways, he is like Prison Mike. So that's my little plug for Last Chance. And they're not paying me. I love that show, man. It's so good.
Hey, man,
now, I've been watching all week. That's been getting me hyped up for football. I need to hit somebody at this point.
You got to watch up. Absolutely. You got to watch out for those dementors. I'm a sucker for sports documentaries. So any really sports documentary I think I'll enjoy, I'll usually watch it. But in regard to football,
yes, NFL training camp.
I think specifically the AFC is a little bit more open. I mean, the Chargers, you look out West, the Chargers obviously had a phenomenal year last season. Philip Rivers looked amazing.
Phenomenal regular season.
I mean,
and that's their
needless to say, with the Chargers.
Well, no, because when we're talking about every team sort of having this fatal flaw with the Chargers, I would think that their fatal flaw is that every single year they get to January and they completely fall apart.
Yeah.
Also, absolutely. They essentially have to play 16 road games because the only people who go to those games are fans of the opposing team who want to go to LA and take in a game.
But they sell out. They sell out.
They sell out all, I think it's like 18,000 seats.
I think it might be 30. You might be underselling. Is it 8? It might be 18.
I'll look real quick. Keep making your point.
The Chiefs, obviously, they lost a bunch of guys this offseason to, domestic violence. And then
they didn't.
They lost Kareem Hunt. He's gone.
That's true. That was last year, but yeah, you're right.
Last year, Kareem Hunt left, and I mean, they were fine, but yeah, Tyreek Hill, he is still with them, isn't he? I mean, I didn't know if they released him or not.
Do you want to get into that now? Do you want to start digging into that?
Yeah, we just talked about the Chiefs, so yeah, let's do it.
Real quick, because there is something else you brought up, and it makes more sense, and then we'll get into Hill as soon as I find the attendance here on freaking Wikipedia. That's a mess. 27,000.
Okay, so
it was a little more
kind of in the middle, yeah.
You mentioned the Browns. How much are you buying in? Because I see people projecting the Browns from 5 wins to Super Bowl contender potentially. So,
I think it's going to be one of those two. Nothing in between. You have such volatile personalities. I mean, you're putting Odell Beckham Jr. on a team with Kareem Hunt and Baker Mayfield. Jarvis Landry. I feel like they're either going to click and be phenomenal and awesome to watch, or they're just going to crash because they just don't have the leaders necessary to, fight for a Super Bowl. So it's going to be one of those two. I think.
I actually think it's in between. I think they're 8-8, 9-7 now. I think they can win that division 8-8, 9-7.
Sure.
Because I don't think the Steelers are that good, and I think the Bengals and Ravens are going to be two of the worst teams in football this year. The Bengals might win 2 games. So. My thing with the Browns is I actually think they will click because they have a lot of extreme personalities, but they're all similar. The issue for me is the coach, Freddie Kitchens. This guy's never been a head coach before. He doesn't know what he's getting into. We have no idea what he's capable of. It's like handing the keys to a finely tuned sports car to Gary Busey. You don't know what's going to happen. There's no way to predict what could possibly happen. So I think just they're a very talented team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. That's going to be enough with a weak schedule, I think, to steal them some games, regardless of the coaching and regardless of the inexperience. I think they could maybe – they're probably a 6-win team when you factor in the coach, but given the talent and everything, they could trip into 2 or 3 wins. I really do think that. And then I don't know if they're at the point where they can win a game in January yet, but I do think the Browns could make the playoffs this year. I think they could win that division this year. I don't think they win more than 9 games, 10 absolute tops if some things go their way. But – to me, it all lies with Freddie Kitchens, and I think this is a huge year for him because if I'm the Browns, I really don't know why they're giving him this shot, but it's too late. He's your head coach. So I give him this shot, and then if he can't figure it out, there's going to be a lot of guys out there. You may be able to pull some people out of retirement even who would love to coach the talent you have assembled there in Cleveland. So if Freddie Kitchens can't get it figured out, I think he gets one shot at this, and then next year they look for another coach. All right, let's get into the suspension mess that is the NFL. So, I mean, where do you want to start? I mean, Tyreek Hill makes sense. No games for legally nothing, but anybody with common sense, he did some really bad things. Even though he legally didn't get in trouble, he told his wife she should be afraid of him. He probably what was his name? Josh Brown, the kicker for the Giants, got a game for that. Should have gotten more than a game for that, but got a game for that a couple years back as a kicker. Jaren Reed got, do we even know what he got suspended for that he's missing?
It was a 2017 incident. I had no idea what the details were. I'm not sure. I can try to do a quick Google search, but I saw it was a 2016 incident. But I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't know because he was apparently appealing that suspension and the decision was made last week in which, it was officially announced. But I think the main point, regardless of what he did, the main point is there's really no rhyme or reason for giving any suspension in the NFL. They've suspended people for multiple games for a lot less than what they had on Tyreek Hill.
For literally nothing in some cases, as we know all too well.
Absolutely. So I think it just comes down to the NFL is immune to it. And I thought that Roger Goodell should have been fired after the Ray Rice handling. But the reality is this is a systematic problem that's not going to change because people are going to continue to watch. And I know that sounds awful, but it's a horrible reality. And it's just, it's frustrating to watch, but they have a great product and they know they can get away with it.
But then why issue these suspensions to begin with? I agree with you. They actually took a ratings hit when they went on that suspension purge 3-4 years ago, and Brady's suspension was a part of that. And they actually took a hit in the ratings. And I think they kind of figured out taking star players off the field is wrong when it comes to the ratings. And I get that, but the precedent you set now in not suspending Tyreek Hill, and I know he didn't do anything against the law, but when it comes to the NFL personal conduct policy and all the Chiefs fans defending Tyreek Hill on Twitter, that was hilarious because, one, you're defending a guy who's an absolute garbage human being. And, two, they're coming at Patriots fans expecting us not to have knowledge of the personal conduct policy like we haven't spent the last 5 years every single waking moment knowing the nooks and crannies of that thing to defend Tom Brady. Like, babies born in New England, they are read the NFL personal conduct policy in the hospital, right? We know that. So the NFL personal conduct policy, that even though he was not found guilty of anything, states it's that term conduct detrimental to the league. That's a very vague term. There is a lot of leeway in that term, and it's up to an arbitrator, who oftentimes that arbitrator is Roger Goodell, to decide whether or not to issue a suspension. Mm-hmm. And if you want to say Tyreek Hill was never convicted of a crime, never found guilty of a crime, fine. But it's going to be really tough to look me in the eye and tell me that his conduct, putting himself in that situation, telling his wife she needed to be afraid of him, is not conduct detrimental to the league. That makes the NFL look bad. And now to not suspend him, Roger Goodell is being a hypocrite, because not suspending him, frankly, is conduct detrimental to the league, I think. So I don't understand that. If you're not going to suspend him, fine. But outside of drug-related issues, which are so I'm not talking about the personal conduct policy now. I'm talking about the drug policy, and there's issues with that, and that's fine, but that's its own thing. When it comes to the personal conduct policy, if you don't suspend Tyreek Hill, how the hell can you suspend anybody with a straight face after that if you are Roger Goodell? You have just set a precedent that you cannot get by. And, you know, then when you lessen the suspensions of a guy like Randy Gregory, right, it just adds to it. Josh Gordon is going to be an interesting case to see if he is actually suspended by the league when he's ready to come back. That is going to be interesting. I would not be surprised if he serves a suspension, but based on what we've seen, I think you have to figure that he's not going to be suspended if and when he's ready to come back. And that is the precedent the NFL has set.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have no ground to stand on when it comes to the moral component of sports. They've been like this for a while. I shouldn't be surprised at this point, but I am. You had two pieces of evidence, one of which was obviously the recording in which
You weren't surprised a little bit?
I was. I said, okay.
I shouldn't
have been surprised, but I was. Just because, you know, they had the "you should be afraid of me" recording. That's a threat. That is a blatant threat right there. And then you have his kid, when you match that with the fact that his kid mysteriously broke his arm and law enforcement think it was
mysteriously said daddy did it.
Yeah.
So mysteriously, but just throw all that to the side for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to make this about whether or not Tyreek Hill is guilty or not, because legally he's not, and it comes down to the court of public opinion. But in that court of public opinion, which is so prevalent, especially to an organization like the NFL that is so PR conscious, we've seen Roger Goodell suspend guys to cover his own ass before to save face, right? We saw it with Brady. We saw it with Josh Brown. That whole thing was really weird. He probably should have been suspended, but I don't think he got suspended for what he did. I think he got suspended because Roger Goodell felt like it made him look bad not suspending him.
Yeah.
Okay. Roger, and you can look at times where he's not suspended guys to save his own ass. Aaron Hernandez was never suspended. Did Goodell need to suspend him in the moment? No. Does it entitle him? I'm not going to go down.
I think that's a different story.
But my point is, he's not suspended guys to save face, to not draw attention to things. There was already attention on this. There was a lot of attention on this. How does Roger Goodell not just give it? Like, this isn't me critiquing the NFL's policy. This is just me thinking Roger Goodell's an idiot. Given what you've done in the past, Roger, How do you not suspend Tyreek Hill 2 games to save your own ass, to cover your own ass? Just suspend him 2 games. He can appeal it down to 1. That's not really going to kill you in the ratings. And yeah, people are still probably going to be pissed at you. There's always those people out there who are going to want him suspended more. There's people out there who probably never want him to play football again. I know there's people out there like that. And that's probably too extreme in the other direction. But how do you give the guy nothing? How do you not just cover your own ass and say, hey, we're going to slap you with 2 games, appeal it, we'll knock it down to 1. Just because I got to do something to make the league look good. I'm not saying it's right for Goodell to do that, but he's done it in the past at times where it is just painfully obvious. If you're going to do it there, how do you not do it here? That is my problem.
If this wasn't one of the top wide receivers in the league, I mean, he's going to be suspended. This comes down to the fact that, and you mentioned this, they do not want to take another star off the field. This guy, you know, he does sell tickets. And right. And unfortunately, that takes precedent over justice in the NFL.
I don't know that you're losing ratings on the Chiefs because they have the MVP, the Madden cover athlete, Patrick Mahomes. I'm not sure losing Tyreek Hill for 2 games is really a ratings hit.
I think it's one less marketable player. Maybe he's not that marketable anymore, but he's still a huge talent. So I
fantasy football fans. No, you're right. No, that's fair. Yeah. You're right.
For sure. So yeah, I just think the hypocrisy is you know at a ridiculous point. Goodell has said that he wanted to lead by example and you know correct the mistakes he had made in the past. The NFL as a whole, and it was all a bunch of BS. And I think we knew that at the time. But it's just frustrating because you don't have to mean it. You don't have to like think that he should be suspended. You just have to take the action and right. make that statement and make it right. be known.
Thank you. That's
all you have to do.
All right. Let's talk a little Patriots training camp real quick here before we get to the final thoughts. What's one thing you're looking at, a position battle, a player you want to see prove himself? I'll be there tomorrow. Let me be your eyes. If you want me to text you one update tomorrow from camp, what is it?
I don't know if there's necessarily an update. I want to see how the D-line comes along with Michael Bennett in the mix. I want to see this tight end core in general. You know, who's going to emerge out of that? It seems like Ben Watson's going to be the number one guy. But overall, what I'm looking for this season, this training camp, I guess, is more how they're going to evolve that offense. And I know we're probably a little too early to get into that phase, but you lost your one of your number one targets. And you're going to have to go away from the tight end or you have to go away from being as reliant on the tight end position. So I'm going to look for that. But there wasn't all that much turnover. So I'm just going to see who develops. I'm just looking forward to it, I guess.
So there's a lot of things that I'm going to be looking at, obviously. But I'll say Belichick said today that the first 2 days of practice are essentially an extension of mini camp. It's still a training session until you get to day 3, and that's when the pads come on, and that's when you go full contact, and that's when the evaluation starts. So at least to start camp, because we're going to do a couple shows during camp, so I'm going to parcel this all out here. But the one thing I want to see before they put the pads on, and Evan Lazar, Sierra Goodwill from CLNS, you can actually watch the video of it. It's on the CLNS YouTube page right now. When we talked about this today, they laughed at me for saying this. Show me the punters. I want to see Jake Bailey, Ryan Allen. It was a really great battle during minicamp. I've been back and forth a million times since whenever that was, beginning of April, on who I think is going to make the team, who I want to make the team between the two of them. But they're both so – look, if it was any other position, this would be a national story because they are both incredibly good at what they do. They both do it in a very unique way, and you have a guy who – I'm kind of saying this tongue-in-cheek, but not really. Was a borderline Super Bowl MVP last year against a guy who, relative for his position, was a pretty high draft pick. And you can only keep one. There's no shot the Patriots keep 2 punters. It's not happening. So it's punters, but there's a lot of drama, and it's going to come down to the little nitty-gritty details of who gets the spot. So I'm excited for the punters. Once we get the pads on, whatever.
Yeah.
I have a million other things I want to look at when they get the pads on. I want to see N'Keal Harry and Dontrell Inman because they're kind of limited when you're in a non-contact practice. I want to see how Isaiah Wynn looks. We'll get into all that another time.
Yeah.
But the first 2 days, no pads. I will be looking at the punters.
First 2 days, no pads. That's a fair thing to be looking at because that decision is going to be one he has to make. And obviously anything goes with Belichick. I
don't think he's taking it lightly either. And we shouldn't take it lightly.
Absolutely.
You saw what that meant last year in the Super Bowl. The fact, like, I know people
which
think
makes it an odd move, doesn't it? That he's willing to create this competition.
Yes, and again, it adds to the drama of it. That's part of what makes this so intriguing to me. This position battle is Bill Belichick. We know this, former players have told us this. 50% of Bill Belichick's year-end evaluation of a player is the last game of the season, whatever that last game is, whether it's a Super Bowl win, Super Bowl loss, playoff loss, regular season, whatever. It's the last game that player played that year. So 50% of Bill Belichick's evaluation of Ryan Allen was his Super Bowl performance, which was outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of drama here. I don't know. I love it. I am very excited for it.
It's going to be, I'm sure you're a football junkie. You're going to love this type of thing. Obviously, Jake Bailey must be a lefty punter, correct?
He's actually a righty. But he's a without spending 10 minutes on this, because I want to talk about the Red Sox.
No, please go ahead.
No, this is some people. Yeah. People should know. Jake Bailey is a righty,
mm-hmm.
but he's a, I guess you could call it a spin specialist. I don't know what the term is. I'm going to call him a spin specialist, in that he's very good at manipulating the rotation on the ball while it's in the air. And that rotation is a huge part of the reason Bill Belichick always likes lefty punters, because the ball rotates different off a lefty's foot than a righty's foot.
It's like an Australian toilet.
Exactly. So even though you're still going to have, in general, a righty rotation, because Bailey can control it so well, I think Belichick's willing to make that exception. Because I've never heard him say this. It's actually something I'm going to ask him about, and I won't get an answer from him about it. But I want to ask him to, you know, so I know I asked him, is where he values how a punter puts rotation and spin on the ball. Because I think it's his top priority when he scouts punters, more so in hang time, more so in leg strength, any of it. Because you can do a lot of things with spin. You can make the ball bounce if it hits. Certain spins are really tough for returners to field. Jake Bailey, a couple times in college, a lot of his punts got fumbled by returners, and some of that has to do with the spin. So he is a righty, but he has a very, like I said, him and Ryan Allen, both very unique guys. And Allen's great with spin too.
Yeah.
It's not just that he's a lefty and he has lefty spin. He's great with controlling that spin. They both are. And that's unique, that not every punter can do that. That's what part of the reason I'm so interested in it.
I can hear Evan Lazar rolling his eyes right now.
So all of a sudden, last day of OTAs, Evan's like, you know, I think I'm going to do a feature on Jake Bailey. Like, hold on. You wouldn't do the thread on him during the draft. I did it.
Yeah.
You laughed at me for charting hang times during OTAs and minicamp. I was doing it. And now all of a sudden that it's a popular headline. Oh, move over, Barth. Move over. Evan Lazar is covering the punters. Like, no. If you want, look, all of our CLNS coverage is great. Everybody, for not following Evan, should follow Evan. But stick with me. I've been with the punters since day one. I've cared about the punters the whole time. All right. You can get the rest of the coverage from Evan. If you get one part of your Patriots coverage, two parts of your Patriots coverage from me this year, it's helmet types and face mask types and punters.
Absolutely.
Those are the two things I plan on specializing in. So
one more thing before we move on that I'm looking for, or that I would like you to look at if this does in fact happen, because no pads obviously, but I'm sure they'll be doing a lot of 7-on-7 type of stuff. Jawan Williams and N'Keal Harry, if they go up against each other, I think that'd be interesting.
That's going to be a fun. So the one-on-ones I want to see are that, and I want to see if they give us, you know, like linebacker, running backs, that kind of thing. I want to see Jamie Collins against Damian Harris and James White, and see if he's still that coverage animal he was before.
Not football related, but Chase Winovich, is he the new Gronk? How does he mingle? Is he going to be a rookie who's going to keep his head down, do his work, or will he be outgoing on the field?
We got to see him a little more. I really think he's his own thing. I think it's easy to compare him to Gronk. I think it's super lazy to compare him to Rob Ninkovich, which a lot of people do. I think he's going to be his own animal. He might be closer to Matthew Slater, honestly, than anybody else.
Really? Okay. That's a wide spectrum there. But, we'll see. I think he's a big personality when I say that. Maybe he's not going to be exactly the Gronk type party-wise, but will he be noticeable on the field just given his personality and will that happen?
We see it. Well, let's see what they do with his hair. Cause I think that tells a lot. I do. All right. Let's move on to final thoughts. Both Red Sox related. Let's go chronologically. So I'll start, cause it's about the game that happened earlier on Wednesday, and then you can get into it. this isn't even really a complaint about the Red Sox. It's believe it or not, it's not. I mean, they looked like crap against the Rays. Even the game they won Tuesday night, they had no business winning. And I have my confidence level with this team is at zero. But you know who I have less confidence with? Angel Hernandez, who delayed the game's one pitch in 21 minutes. Because first of all, we should not let the Tampa Bay Rays be a thing anymore. I don't know why we continue to let them exist as a baseball team. They get no fans. They have some talent, but they do all these weird things. Kevin Cash, so instead of using a lefty specialist, what he did was he brought two pitchers into the game, puts one on the mound, he puts one on first base. First pitcher gets the first out, then they switch him back, and then there was a double switch, and there's no need to get that complicated in a regular season game, especially when the umpire is Angel Hernandez, because Angel Hernandez, shocker, worst umpire in baseball, did not know the rules and delayed the game 21 minutes as Alex Cora tried to explain the rules to him, to the point where Cora had to play the game under protest. And let us never forget, July 24th, 2019, Angel Hernandez, who sued the MLB for passing over him on it for passing over him for a job, who tried to start like a social justice cause for umpires being called out for doing a bad job. A guy who has been a major league umpire for 28 years did not know the rules in a major league baseball game. They need to shoot all of these umpires into the sun. Bring on the robots. Bring them on. But like, and it was a day game. You know who's in the crowd on a day game in the summer? Kids, little kids who you need to get to love this game if you want to keep it viable or alive. And instead, you're one pitch in 21 minutes, and they don't even tell the fans what's going on. There's no PA announcement. So you're just sitting there watching Alex Cora berate and roll his eyes at Angel Hernandez. Figure it out. This is why baseball is dying. It's because of people like Angel Hernandez.
He's brutal. Awful.
Awful.
The only names of umpires I know are the bad ones. The only exception to that is Randy Marsh, and that's because he shares a name with the greatest television dad of all time. Angel Hernandez is a bum. He always has been a bum. Players hate him. Managers hate him. I'm pretty sure his colleagues hate him. So this is old news. I'm surprised this is the first time I've seen him in this position, to be honest. But you know, you have Kevin Cash who's getting a little bit too cute with the strategy of the game.
That's nothing. It's a day game in July. Relax.
Come on. Yeah.
All right. You big man, Kevin Cash. You're cool. You know how to do all these substitutions. You want to be Joe Madden. Relax.
Just and side note, we talk about just to talk about your point on the Rays. I mean, why does Florida have any teams, first of all, especially in Tampa Bay? The facility stinks. They get no fans to attend those games. And you have other markets that would be decent for baseball. You can go to Nashville. You can go to Montreal. You can go to a lot of different places. Las Vegas. They already got a minor league team. They need to figure out an exit strategy because they obviously do not have the fan base to support that team. All right, my final thought?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. We'll parlay this into a Yankees Red Sox segment. Obviously, four game series starting Thursday, July 25th. Recording this obviously on the 24th. This is a big series. I think the decision has been made. The Red Sox stand no shot at fighting for a World Series this season. I don't really have much confidence Nathan Eovaldi is going to work in the back end of the bullpen, and I don't have much confidence that the guy who would work in the back end of that bullpen is really out there. Andrew Cashner is obviously not filling that void. Especially because he's a starting pitcher. But beyond that, the Yankees seem like a team of destiny. If you watch that Twins game that they had, Aaron Hicks with that unbelievable catch in center to end the game, they just have that feel. And I think the Red Sox had it a little bit last year. We saw it obviously in 2013. And every year you see that world championship team, and in hindsight, you can kind of see it. You can kind of see there were those signs that, you know, this team might be onto something. I think the Yankees are that team this year. And it's honestly been a long time coming. They've had an amazing roster the past few years, a lot of young talent, and it's all kind of coming to fruition. And they're clearly the most talented team in the league. So I expect this series, even though it's at Fenway, I don't think the Red Sox are going to really come out on top. Maybe they split it, but that's out of desperation, if anything. Come trade deadline time, sell. Get rid of some guys.
Yeah, I mean, I already gave up. The three guys that should be gone. I mean, it doesn't have to be a hard sell, you know, but I think Moreland is on the last year of his deal. Some playoff team will take him. Bradley, you still have another year of arbitration, but you save yourself. He's probably going to get a couple million bucks. You save that. You can put that towards Mookie or somebody else. And then Rick Porcello. Yeah, again, and part of the – they don't have necessarily enough starting pitchers to fill it out after that, but you go, you find somebody cheap. Like, you can get – they just need – they don't need to get elite prospects, but they need to replenish the system. They don't have enough guys who are right before – ready to come right up. They have some talent, you know, down in A-ball, but those guys are so far away that you need intermediary talent, even if it's just mid-level prospects. These don't have to be top 100 guys.
Yeah, you, I mean, you also need to just get rid of some players so that you can afford the guys you want to keep. You have no one's talking about Rafael Devers. He's going to be due to make some big money one day if he continues to play like
him. Benintendi, that brings me to my last point. If and this is a little extreme, but let's say you know JD Martinez is opting out and not coming back, you can get a top 100 prospect for him.
Sure,
at least one, right? And then the other thing is if. I know he has one more year of arbitration. If you know it's over with Mookie Betts, you know, as much as I don't want this to become another Sean Lester situation, maybe you don't do it now, but this offseason you sign him to that arbitration deal. If you can't get him locked up long-term, you sign him to that arbitration deal and you trade him because you can get multiple top 100 guys for Mookie Betts. Certainly. Like, absolutely you can. Especially if he's going to sign a long-term deal wherever he ends up. Well, so,
and you could end up doing the JD Martinez, the John Lester thing. I mean, look at the Yankees; they did it with Aroldis Chapman.
Here's the problem with John Lester: they waited way too long for all of this to happen, and all they got back for him was—I shouldn't say all they got back. I mean, he helped them win a World Series, but Rick Porcello through the series of trades, right? Yoenis Cespedes is actually a good player. But they trade John Lester, they end up with Rick Porcello.
Yeah.
That's a downgrade.
When that was,
you can't let that happen again.
Was that one of those August trades? That was a late. Was that a late?
No, that was the deadline. That was on the deadline.
Okay.
That was on the deadline. It was Lester for Cespedes. And then in the offseason, Cespedes played half a year in Boston. Then that offseason, they traded Cespedes for Porcello.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then they re-signed Porcello. Right. But you could do, instead of labeling it the John Lester method, the Aroldis Chapman method. Which the Yankees did.
Are two opposite things. And I would be fine if the Red Sox looked. I don't think you can do that with Mookie. I think once Mookie's gone, he's gone.
Not with Mookie, with JD Martinez, if anyone. I think.
That's possible, but if he wants to be here, he's going to opt in.
I think he can make more money. He's underpaid.
Can the Red Sox pay him more money? Because then Mookie's gone. If you up what you're paying JD, I mean, between Mookie, Benintendi, and Devers, you're probably losing two of those guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, if JD's not opting in, I mean, to me at that point, I don't think if he opts out of that contract, he's not coming back. One way or the other, he's not coming back.
Well,
That's the way I see it right now.
Well, I think he's opting out because if he's smart financially, he can make more money than he is.
He's hitting like 190 this year with runners in scoring position. I don't know about that.
He's got 21. I'll look up his numbers real quick, but he's got 21 home runs or 20 home runs or so. I don't know. I feel like he's a guy who is still underpaid. He's a great leader. He's kind of a second coach. He's hitting 294, 20 home runs, 55 RBI. It's not what he did last year.
Right.
Maybe
he bets on himself, but I don't think the Red Sox can afford to pay him any more than they are. And you look at the guy, when you look at the guys you're going to be up, because you mentioned Devers and then Benintendi and then Betts, and you can't lose all three of those guys to keep JD Martinez, who when those three all leave, you'll be paying 30 something million dollars when he's well into his 30s. You can't, that's just stupid. And I don't think Dave Dombrowski's very good at his job. So I guess there's a possibility that that happens. But I think that would be a disaster. One last point on this, and then you can weigh in and then we'll wrap it up because this is a long show. But the one thing I am worried about, and this is regardless of what happens with the Yankees, because again, I think I don't know that they should sell, but I'm not giving up prospects to get half a year of Ken Giles at this point. I don't think they should buy. Their farm system's depleted enough. If you can trade some, you know, one of the guys who's outside of your own top 30 in the DSL to get a decent bullpen arm, whatever. But they shouldn't trade. Outside of Chavis, I might move Chavis, but they shouldn't trade Benintendi. They shouldn't trade any of these pitchers they got in AAA, none of that. I would say the one thing I'm worried about is Dombrowski is going to be desperate. I did this rant last week. Dombrowski is going to be desperate to save his job, and he's going to do something stupid, and he's going to ruin the Red Sox future more than he has, moving Tanner Houck to the bullpen, moving Mike Schwerin to the bullpen, moving Darwinson Hernandez to the bullpen, just things that are stunting guys' developments. They're just screwing around with Chavis. The Red Sox cannot let Dave Dombrowski ruin their next 10 years so he can try to save his job this year. The Red Sox need to be careful with him. They need to have an eye on what he is doing, and his leash needs to be way shorter than it seems like it is now.
Do you think his decision-making, this trade deadline, hinges on this series, or does he already know what he wants to do?
I think he knows he needs to salvage the season to save his job. So if
I don't think his job's in jeopardy. I think you're putting him on a leash.
I think he wants to buy either way. I think depending on what happens to the series depends on how desperate he is and how aggressive he is and what he's willing to give up. But I think he's buying either way. He's not a guy who sells. He doesn't sell.
Well, that's true. He's not a rebuilder.
Right. Really. And it kills me because, look, it's not easy for a big market team like the Red Sox to admit they have to chalk up a year to a loss. I get that. But was it 3-4 years ago? And all the credit in the world to the Yankees, who were the last team who would ever, you'd think, do this. They did it. They said, you know what? It's not our year. Mm-hmm. They sold. And because a lot of the guys who are succeeding now, they got in that time span, they sold 3 or 4 years ago. They chalked the season up to a loss. And now they're an absolute wagon. That could be the Red Sox if they just swallow their pride and sell off some ancillary pieces.
Wasn't Dombrowski, did he make the Beckett, Mike Lowell, and Hanley Ramirez trade?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because
he might have. But that was different. That was a fire sale. That was coming from the owner. They were cutting the budget.
Okay, maybe. But
that
was in
2006.
That was 2000. Oh, yeah, it was 2006.
2006, yeah. And that Dombrowski was with, I gotta find him here.
He might have been with the Tigers at that point.
He was, yeah, Tigers 2002, 2015. He did the Marlins' first fire sale. Yeah. But again, that's the owner coming in. We all know about the Marlins' ownership. That's the owner coming in and said, I don't want to pay any of these players, get rid of them. So that's different. That's not a rebuild. That's something else. And I think that's part of the reason, if I remember correctly, they ended up leaving Miami. He wasn't happy he had to do that.
So. Yeah, and at this point, he's, you know, a 60-year-old guy. He's been in this game for a while. Like him or not, he's a top exec in the MLB, a top baseball mind. So, you know, he's not going to swallow his pride and let ownership make decisions for him, even if it is an ownership as involved as the Red Sox. But still, I don't think he's going to just try to sell the farm to you know, get a wild card spot. And I think a wild card spot is, it's right there. They're two games out.
But it's the MLB wild card. It's just so... It's like the playing game in March Madness, that 16-16 game. Do we count those as tournaments?
Well, it's not, because guess what? It's all about who gets hot at the right time.
You have to throw your best pitcher, and then you have to go out and win a best of three. That game is designed to eliminate teams.
That game
is not designed to give an extra team a chance. It's designed to eliminate a team. If they get to the wild card game, woohoo, fantastic, cool. One more game of baseball.
And if they win that wild card game, they have as good of a shot as anyone.
Then they get washed in the next round because their starting rotation has been inconsistent at best this year, and they're going to have to put probably their best arms in Roto Rodriguez. They got to throw him in that wild card game, or you throw Chris Sale and you hope for the best, and then you're looking
David. David Price or Erod, and by that point, things could change. It's not going to be Chris Sale, we know, because he's not good with, you know, September or October baseball.
Right, so exactly. You're already writing off your best pitcher. Price is unpredictable as hell. Who knows if Erod's going to be healthy? I don't know. You want to go into that game throwing Rick Porcello? You want to go into that game with an opener?
Listen, they have an explosive.
3 innings of Mike Schwerin, innings of Brian Johnson, 3 innings of Hector Velasquez, and hope you hold on.
Well, a lot of things have – a lot of things have to go right anytime you win a World Series. That was the case for the that was the case with last year's 108 win team. You know, Jackie Bradley Jr. was the ALCS MVP.
Things were going right all season long. Baseball's not a flip the switch sport.
That could be.
Like you're saying, okay, things could go right for them. That would be the first time all season things have
David
gone
Price
right
flipped the switch, no? He flipped the switch. He's a guy who never performed in the postseason. Jackie Bradley Jr. flipped the switch.
I'm saying on the season. You know who you sound like right now?
Who?
You sound like a green teamer. No, it'll be fine when they get to the playoffs.
What I'm making an argument for is the fact that this team is, you know, they're 56-47. They're 9 games above 500. And the reality is, in baseball, all you got to do is make it to the postseason.
They're under 500 and against teams over 500.
I know. I'm not betting on them.
And you know
Let me just finish the point. Go ahead. Because I'm not betting on them. But what I'm saying is last year what worked for them was putting Chris Sale in that rover position. Same with the guy like Nathan Eovaldi. And it just happened to click. They did it without Craig Kimbrell playing well. He was garbage that entire postseason. And a lot of things ended up going right. And I know that that was the case kind of the entire season. But it can still happen. Wildcard teams have won the World Series before. It could happen this year. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying this is a very talented team. There's no denying that. The lineup's good. And listen, if they get hot the right time, yeah, they can obviously win. That's any team that's in the position the Sox are in.
You know what that team had last year that you need to win that wild card game and win in the playoffs?
A new manager?
Well, yes and no. No, that team had balls. That team had balls.
Well, it was.
I'll tell you this about this Red Sox team. The one thing I know they don't have is balls. They're under 500 at home. The Boston Red Sox, with that offense, who play at Fenway Park, are under 500. That is among all the things that have gone wrong with this team. That is the most pathetic to me. No Boston sports team that it wants to be considered a playoff contender. I said this about the Bruins a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Should be under 500 at home. Because if you can't get up for these fans in this city, you're not going to get up for a big moment. That's just a fact. That's just, and they are well under 500 at home. Yeah, so for no other reason than that, I can't put any stock in the Red Sox.
I think last year was a transitionary period. They're trying to rid themselves of the John Farrell stench. And you know, they just played out of their minds. They had a good roster and they played as well as they are talented. This year it's not clicking. And
they need,
I did say sell.
Oh, that is fair. You did say sell. You did drift into green team or territory. I'm not drifting into green team. A little bit there. You could admit it. You did.
Well, the only reason, listen, I think that you have to get rid of guys because they're going to leave regardless. And right. Red Sox,
you don't do that if you think you can win a World Series.
And that's the main takeaway. That said, you put Eovaldi in that rover role. You have Chris Sale comes in the eighth and locks it down, whatever you want to do. They did it last year. Your pitching rotation is much more flexible, and that would benefit the Red Sox greatly. I think it's a different game in the postseason, and, anything could happen. I'm not betting on them.
I'll leave it at this because I wanted to get us off by 6:30 at 6:45. No matter what happens, if they want to get to the World Series, they're going to have to beat the Yankees at some point. They're going to have to do it. So let's see if they can do it this weekend. And look, maybe they sweep the Yankees this weekend, and then I'll be, might perk my interest a little bit. But they get washed this weekend, it's all over. So they have to beat the Yankees before any of that is relevant. And let's see what they do this weekend. And we'll discuss that series next week. We'll talk more training camp next week. You can stay posted with the show on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. For Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barr. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.